And before that, we heard Mark Lewis on flute playing Wonderfall. And I have Mark Lewis here on the phone. Hey, Mark.
Hey.
Good to hear your voice this time.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that sounded like Monk at first, and then I said, no, man, it's not Monk. Who is it?
Yeah, it's Monk's tune, played by David Kukoski. Yeah. Yeah, well, we listened to both of the tunes of yours that I have, Birdhouse and Wonderfall, in the last half hour or so. And I've been telling people you're coming to play with Bram Winans here in Kansas City.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun.
And what are the nights you're playing?
We're playing Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night. And we're playing from 6 to... What is it? Six to 10 on Thursday, and then 7 to 11 on Friday and Saturday.
Mm-hmm. And that's the Majestic Steakhouse, Brahms' regular haunts downtown on Broadway. And presumably you'll be playing with Brahm, and Tommy Ruskin is the regular drummer, so I'm going to assume that he's going to be playing with you guys.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, yeah.
Yeah, Tommy and Brahm are both... very swinging musicians. It will swing hard.
Oh, that's going to be fun. That's going to be fun. I asked him if we could do some Bird, and he said, oh, yeah, we can do some Bird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that'll be a kick coming to Kansas City and playing Bird. I hope I'm worthy of it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, there's a mural upstairs at the Majestic, and Bird is one of the people in the mural. It's pretty cool.
Oh, that's great. You know, anytime I get depressed or feel bad, I just put on something by Bird or Monk, one of the two.
Yeah.
And then I just keep going. It's just, I mean, there's so much joy in the playing that you just can't feel bad anymore.
Mm.
You know? I mean, well, let's leave the Lover Man, that one session aside, though. That was kind of painful, but, you know, the Dial session.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I know what you mean. Yeah, the rest of the time, he was good. Listen to the Verve version of Loverman.
Oh, yeah.
That's better.
Oh, yeah. It's still great to hear him play. I mean, he's still Bird, but you can hear that he was not feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Mark, you're a West Coast guy, am I correct?
Well, that's what they say, yeah. I lived in Holland for 14 years, and I played a lot of avant-garde when I first went there with people like Bobby Few and Muhammad Ali, which was Rashid's brother, Noah Howard, people like that. You know, Ray Drummond we played over there with. And it was quite a scene in Paris and Rome, that kind of stuff. And then I just worked on my own music, and I was coming from that genre, because, you know, I got out of the school over here called Cornish Institute of Allied Arts, and they had a great jazz program, and so I was listening to a lot of John Coltrane, Interstellar Space, Meditation, things like that, and stuff with Pharoah Sanders, too. So we were doing that, or attempting to do it. I mean, we were young, experimenting, and so it was real funny, because when I went over there, I was looking for any gig I could get. And the first gig I got was in Paris with Noah Howard at Le Petit Forum. And I remember it was the day that Rassan Roland Kurt passed away. It was not a good day for us musicians, but we gave a tribute concert to him, and we made walls of sound, as they would say. And after I got off that tour, I worked on my own music, which was structured. It had a lot more structure in it. Some of it was pretty free blowing, but you know, there were a lot of changes and, you know, things. And we did an album called Tears of the City, which got promoted pretty well on the West Coast, believe it or not. Even though it was pretty avant-garde, it was done with Hein van de Hein. You might know him. He's a bass player from Holland.
No, I don't.
Came over. Yeah, he played. A lot with, in later days with Lee Konitz. He did an album with him too. And, he did pretty well actually, over here, and I think he's in South Africa now. But it was first album, and I had a contract with CBS, and I turned it down. They wanted to kind of make me into a Kenny G, and I was young enough that I said, well, you know, I'm going to do my own thing. I'm not going to sell out. And, you know what, people ask me if, you know, CBS Columbia, if I would have done that now. And I'm thinking, well, you know, I wouldn't have had the life that I've had if I would have changed my music. And I've played a lot of original music. And the thing that you played, the last piece on the flute was original composition. So, you know, there's just a lot of stuff you can do. And then the one before that with the trumpet, it was trumpet and bass.
Yes.
That was basically, we had a band on our restaurant. Well, we didn't really have a band. What happened is the restaurant was going to close that we were playing at. And so we had paid our ASCAP, but BMI was still due, and we only had 2 weeks left, so we just played nothing but ASCAP tunes, except that, yeah. So that was kind of strange, because half of our repertoire was gone, you know, as far as standards go. But I wanted to play some bebop, you know, and most bebop is BMI. So I said, well, let's just play, you know, the chord changes to How High the Moon Ornithology, and we'll call it Birdhouse.
Yeah.
So that's what we did. You know, we had a lot of fun. And the bass player is the same bass player that played on the Sergio Mendez records. And also he recorded Wave and all those things with Antonio Carlos Jobim. So that was really nice because he could play anything we wanted.
Yeah. What's his name?
His name is Robert Matthews.
Wow.
Do you know Bob Matthews? Yeah. Yeah, and then Richard Person, the trumpet player, I told him, I said, well, I'm going to be playing with Brahm in Kansas City, and I asked him if he'd ever heard of him, and he said, I just got back from playing with Brahm in Kansas City.
Oh, really?
I said, well, yeah.
Wow.
So that was kind of cool. He said, oh, yeah, you're going to love it. You're going to love it. So I said, okay, I'm going.
Yeah, cool. Well, you guys have that Holland thing in common. So that's
oh
cool.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, I lived there from 80 until 94. And I was back in San Francisco a couple years off and on, you know, if you'd add them up. Because wanted to keep in touch with the United States, and also I had an office with my record company. I started a company after after CBS didn't want to do what I wanted to do on the record. Then I said, well, I'll just put out my own thing, and we recorded some stuff. But I wanted to keep in touch, so I'd stay in San Francisco, and the office was in Seattle, one of them. So I had one guy up there in the office, and then I did the office with three other people in Rotterdam after a while, and we had a recording studio. So we got musicians to come over from the United States, and we'd record them, and then we'd press the albums and then bring them back to the United States. So that in those days, you know, they had an import bin because the record stores were so vast, like Tower and Peaches and all these huge record stores, that you couldn't get noticed if you're an independent label or, you know, somebody was obscure and just starting out. So we'd import the records to the other country, and then we'd fall in this smaller bin, and then people would notice us. So we did Al Hood and Steve Clover, Hein von Hein, and that was a great album. Al Hood's passed away, but he was one of the genius piano players that have existed in the past that should be more well known, you know. And you know, that's just where we did Philly Joe Jones, Clifford Jordan, and actually we did Philly Joe Jones' last album before he passed away. And we were going to do Al Cohn, but he died before we could get him in the studio. We did a lot of people.
Can I ask you what the name of the Philly Joe Jones record is?
Yeah, it was called The Rotterdam Session.
The Rotterdam Session.
Yeah.
And what's the name of the label again?
Audio Daddy-O.
Audio Daddy-O?
Yeah.
I like that.
That's, I still have this label, but, you know, I don't put out as much as I used to, because everybody seems to be putting out CDs now, of course, and it's easy to do that, and which is great. You know, I was hoping that more musicians would get control, but being a disc jockey, as you know, that's, in one way, it's good, but in another way, there's so much information out there now. Who do you listen to?
Yeah.
What's good? You know, you don't have time to listen to everything.
Yeah.
So,
hey, Mark, can I ask you about The Wonderfall? Is that's from a CD, is it not?
It is from a live recording. Sometimes, I've always recorded as well as an engineer, and they came out with these things which were like complete studios, 16 tracks. Yamaha makes them. I shouldn't say that on the air, sorry.
That's
but
okay.
different companies make these recorders, and then it's like having a 16-track machine on the gig, and I can put it in a Samsonite suitcase. So it has all the bells and whistles on it if you want. You don't usually use it when you're recording. You just use a limiter. And so I would just record the gigs, and now I have a bunch of stuff. And I do mobile recording for people, even though I'm blind, almost blind. Let's just call it partially sighted. It's really nice because if you know what you're doing, it makes really nice recordings. And so I've stored up for myself about 20 things that I haven't released, of course, because I don't know what to release. But that's one of them. It's just a gig.
Okay.
Live recording it. And
it has John Stoll. Yes,
that's John Stoll, yeah. In fact, John and I have done quite a few recordings, both in the studio and as a duo, and then with bass and drums as well. I just got off the phone with him. We're going to be doing a gig tomorrow in a place called Auburn here in the Seattle-Tacoma area. So that's going to be fun. And I don't know, I might record it, but, you know, it's just, it's fun to record, but sometimes it's not, you know, because it's one more thing to think about. And it's fun when somebody else records it, and then you listen to it, and you don't know that it's being recorded. You know, if you have a good engineer, you don't know it's being recorded.
Yeah. Do you play differently if you know it's being recorded?
Well, I always say that it's like having a moat around you and the audience. I mean, you can cross that moat, but you have to make sure there's a bridge there, and the bridge is to forget about everything. And yeah, I guess I play cleaner when I know there's not a recording. I don't take as many chances when there's a recording. I try not to worry about it, and that's why I've done so many recordings of late. But yeah, it's, the Africans have something when they say that when your picture is taken, they take part of your soul, because yeah, you just can't help but play a little differently, I think, when you know it's being recorded, you know.
Yeah.
And the great thing is, the things that you think maybe, oh, I didn't like that, when you listen to them, you say, oh, that wasn't so bad at all. Because a lot of times when you're playing, it's more of a feeling. It's like, how hard did you work to get that particular passage or note? And then it surprised you, and then you resolved it. Because jazz is the only language I know, any music that I know, that you can go back in time, analyze the situation, and then make it right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beauty of it. And that's, to me, that's a great intellectual achievement, and it happens fast. And there's a lot of computations that have to be done and to make it musical, as well as spiritual and of course, emotional. You know, the blend has to be there, the balance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. Hey, going on the same track, The Birdhouse, is that from a record?
That one is just recent. I was going to play with Bob. We've done the duo gigs, and Rhonda wants to make it into a record, or she's been promoting the trio. But that's just another recording that we did just about a month ago, I guess. Was it about a month ago, Rhonda? She's here. Yeah. Yeah, okay. About a month ago. And I said, well, you know, how about I call up Richard. I said, hey, Richard, I'll split my portion of the gig money if you want to come and play. Because Richard and I did an album back in 1984 called Border Crossing. And I did one side was my band in Holland, and the other side was my band in Seattle. And Richard was the trumpet player for that band. It was a quintet. And I've always liked playing with Richard, but these days, as you know, sometimes places have a budget where they don't want to have a quintet. And so, you know, you have to get fewer people. So whenever I can, I call up Richard because I love playing with him. And, you know, that was just something we just got together, and it sounds pretty full for a bass and two horns when you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It feels really nice.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I'd like to put that out. Yeah. In fact, if anybody wants to put it out, you know, I have my own company, but, you know, I don't like to put out too much with my own name. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It's nicer to put other people's things out.
This is the Jazz Geek, and I'm talking with Mark Lewis, who plays flute and alto saxophone, perhaps other things, and he'll be appearing at the Majestic on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of next week with Bram Winans. I'm assuming Thursday will be a duo, yeah, that's what it normally is, and Friday and Saturday will be trio with probably Tommy Ruskin on drums. And Mark's going to be coming in from the West Coast. Do you live in the Portland area, Seattle area? Or?
Seattle, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I live, it's Bremerton, so I compare it with Sausalito with San Francisco. You know, it's just a ferry ride from downtown Seattle. And then you're in Bremerton, so that's kind of why I chose to live here, to be in the city but not be in the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. That's great. How's the scene up there? You play a lot?
Yeah, actually, I was actually on my way from San Francisco to Holland, and I stopped in the Pacific Northwest to see my folks. My dad was still alive, and you know, being a musician, it's hard to see your family sometimes, and so this is where I'm from, and I started to get to work with a guy named Cap DeMero. He gave me a bunch of work at this club. It was just, like, really a neat place. It was held about 150 people, and he had different people in all the time. And I said, well, this is pretty nice. I got some work here, so I'll just stick around till the work runs out. And I've been here 15 years. So I've been working constantly. Oh, I did take a three-year period off. I didn't take any gigs just to build. I have a recording studio here that I handmade all the furniture and stuff. And I did it in the 60s way, so I call it a hippie studio because I respect them. They were slightly older than I growing up, and they seemed like they were wise people with peace and thoughtfulness and learning. And, you know, so I built a studio because I thought, what can I do that I don't have to put a lot of money into, you know, buying these $1,000 sterile metal desks and things like this? And I said, well, I could just make studio from odds and ends, and so that's what I did, and it works out real well with the sound. And then, of course, the equipment, I showed no mercy on the equipment, because then I had my money for the equipment instead of just the decor, I should say.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that's what I did, but it took a while, you know, and everything's hand soldered and the right lengths and the right impedances. And people say, how do you get your sound? How do you get, because they walk in and it looks like, you know, they're just walking in this little shack. And then all of a sudden, I bring out a Neumann or something. It's, oh, that's nice. A microphone. Well, you know what Neumanns are.
Yeah.
You know, you're a recording person. So, yeah, so I have a lot of fun doing that here. And, you know, I don't know how long it'll last, but if it dries up here, then, you know, there's plenty of places to look around with. And Holland's always there, too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks a lot for calling in, Mark. Sorry it took me a while to get your phone working. But
thank you for asking me.
Learn about a new guy, somebody who's coming into town. Again, this is Mark Lewis we were talking with, who plays flute and alto sax. We'll be appearing with Bram Winans at the Majestic on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday next week. And hope you have a great time here in Kansas City. Hope it's not too hot for you. We've been having a super hot summer, but hopefully you'll have some weather like we have today, which is a lot better.
All right. Well, that's great. Well, we've been having a little heat here, too, but nothing like yours, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll see you later, and thanks again.
Okay, Mark. Thank you again.
Hope to see you on the gig. Bye.
Bye.